I think it's probably the rare person who hasn't held on to something because they thought it might be worth some money someday. And if you watch Antiques Roadshow, you see people who are stunned by how much something is worth. I was watching it just the last week, I think. And it was a sort of an amalgamation of all their, you know, the big prizes, the big amounts. So every person who was on that in that particular show, which was a whole collection of reruns, had something really nice. Got me excited. Maybe it got you excited too if you saw it. Larry Mueller here. Takes a practiced eye to know what's what here, what's valuable and what's not. And we're lucky to have Shirley Bauman with us today. She comes by every once in a while to figure out what's trash and what might be treasure. And she is a certified personal property appraiser. She's a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She's the owner of Bauman Auction Services. And Shirley, always great to have you with us. Thanks for coming by.
I certainly am glad to be here.
Appreciate it very much. And you've had some kind of fun recently. You attended an appraisal fair at Monroe County, sponsored by the local historical society. What were some of the interesting items you saw there?
Well, if anyone thinks there aren't real antiques in Wisconsin, they should have been up there because we saw some wonderful things. And you mentioned the roadshow, and they actually had one of these on the roadshow. I saw it Monday evening. It was a sand painting.
Oh, sand art, yes.
By Andrew Clements. And they showed one of those, and we had one of those up in Toma in Monroe County. And Andrew Clements was from McGregor, Iowa. He lived from the 1850s into the 1890s, and he was deaf and mute. And as a child in the 1800s, you know, that kind of separated him from society. So he went and he gathered sand from the Mississippi River, from Pikes Peak State Park in Iowa, all Iowa sand, and he started making sand pictures. And then he did it really, really well. And he did them mainly in drug bottles.
Yeah,
and they are just phenomenal. And to see one in person was really a treat. I have a photo of one on the Heirloom Appraisal Facebook page. Or people could Google Andrew Clements' sand painting to get an idea what we're talking about. And he would go in there and set those pictures and designs in there grain by grain with a fish hook and those kind of tools. They are just unbelievable. And as you can imagine, not all that many survived. They were in glass bottles.
Yeah,
people dropped them. Somebody got curious and opened the top. They were sealed with wax, as this one was. And the one we saw 2 weeks ago was a floral design on one side and a landscape on the other with tiny little deer running through the landscape. It is just unbelievable. And I don't think anybody could duplicate his work. You know, the woman who brought it in said, "Do you think it's really by Andrew Clements?"
And, had to be.
It had to be. And McGregor, Iowa isn't that far from Toma, so it's not all that surprising. And the State Historical Society of Iowa has a nice display of his work if anybody's interested in seeing it in person.
And if you had one of those and wanted to sell it, you'd be getting a pretty good price for that.
Yeah. We're thinking about the $7,000 to $10,000 range.
That little bottle.
That little bottle with lots of beautiful work.
What else did you? And by the way, if we have a link to Shirley's Facebook page and her website as well on my Facebook page. So if you happen to be on my Facebook page, you just go there and click, and you go right to see a picture of that sand art by Andrew Clements. What else? You saw, what was it, a trade stimulator?
Trade stimulator, yes. Those were the one we saw, and many of them were from the late 1800s.
Yeah.
And the general stores would have them on their counter. The one we saw was in an oaken glass case, glass front and back, so you could see it. And inside was a bicycle, a small miniature bicycle. Well, you'd put a nickel in this one, and it would fall down the side and ring a bell, so you knew what was happening. And then you could move a lever that turned the bicycle wheels, and the wheels had numbers on them. And so wherever the wheels stopped, that would tell you if you won a prize. And they were real popular, and you know, everybody still likes to take a chance. They did back then, too, you know, a nickel for a chance. And some of the prizes, one I saw had 5 cigars you'd win, or a chewing gum, or sometimes store credit. The one we saw was just in excellent condition. The bicycle wheels would turn and, you know, they'd spin and stop on the numbers. And advertising and that kind of thing is really a hot collectible right now. So these trade stimulators are also
Getting hot. Getting into the thousands, maybe.
Yes, and in the $5,000-$6,000 range again, and in good shape and working condition.
And you also saw a railroad strongbox?
Yes, a railroad strongbox, which is really interesting. And we had one of those roadshow moments because the woman said she bought it for $15 at a garage sale. And it is about 24 inches by maybe 18 inches, heavy as can be. She said, oh, I had my husband bring it in. Cast iron, very strong. Had heavy locks plus a hasp on the outside and locks you that would slide in. And they would take their money from the East Coast, send it west, and buy gold and send it back in those strong boxes. And so that was really a treat. And we valued that one at about, again, right around that $1,000 mark or so, maybe even a little more being railroad. This one we didn't find the railroad marking on, but to be honest, we couldn't pick it up and look on the bottom. Yeah. Some of them are marked for the railroad company itself, and that would add to it a little bit. So it was a fun find. She wasn't sure what she had. She thought maybe it was a box for a stagecoach first, but this one was railroad.
So her $15 investment was a pretty good one.
Yes, yeah, better than the stock market, I think. So she was thrilled.
Oh, Shirley Bauman, our guest today, certified personal property appraiser, talking with her today about kind of what's hot, what's not. What have you got? Have you got something that you're... would like to know more about, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. If you got a photo of something, you know, we can at least take a look at it and see what we can come up with. That's at The Larry Mueller Show. Jane in Sun Prairie is on the phone, so let's go to her. Hi, Jane. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. I would love to tell you the stories behind these two items, but I'm sure we don't have time. What I do have is a 24-carat gold-filled brooch. Stone in the middle is 1 inch by a half inch of Montana agate, and the gold filigree in that around it is Black Hills gold, and it measures a total of 1 inch by half an inch. I don't know if you can tell without a picture. The other thing I have is it's a Limoges bowl. I have no idea how old it is, but it's on the back it says Haviland Limoges, H&C with underlined with an L. And that one is, I wrote it down. It's 10 by 8 inches wide and long and about 3 inches deep. And the border of it is kind of like an open work border.
With
pink roses, it looks like, maybe peonies.
All right. I'm going to just quickly mention your brooch. Mm-hmm. One of the things that people a lot of times assume is that an appraiser who does antiques can do jewelry. But I can't because I'm not a gemologist, and it's really a different discipline. Now, I can do, I can appraise costume jewelry, antique costume jewelry, and vintage costume jewelry, but I can't really do the fine jewelry. You probably should take that to a jeweler.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also, besides the jewelry value, there can be an antique value. So, a lot of times you look for a jewelry appraiser who does antique jewelry or, as they call it, often estate jewelry.
Oh.
And they are out there. You can find them. On your Limoges bowl, Limoges was an area in France that had wonderful clay for making porcelains, beautiful white clay. And the Haviland Company was one of the premier makers of those items in France. Mm-hmm. There are many other companies, so a lot of times you'll see bowls, plates, that kind of thing, marked just Limoges, and that means it came from that area of France. But yours actually came from the Haviland Company, and there were several generations of that company. But that is a sought-after name. that where it's you talk about it open work, that we call reticulated in the vernacular here. And those are very nice because, of course, when they're open like that, they get weaker and break easier. And the pink roses is a very common design. Not really sure the value of your bowl. Could be somewhere around $40 to $60 in that range.
Right.
But they are sought after. Enjoy it.
Yeah. I'm not looking to sell them. With the bowl, when my mom remarried, a relative of my stepdad's has a house full of antiques. And she, when a wedding came up, she'd go through and choose something. And with the brooch, my parents found it when my great-grandmother died in 1978. Mm-hmm. And they were like, look at this ugly pin. So I threw it in the trash and I kept it. And it was about 6 months ago that I finally decided to clean it up. And I polished it for over a week. And that's when I discovered, you know, the colors and everything. So I'm looking forward to having this thing here. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Karen in Eau Claire up next. So let's go to her. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a barometer that is round and wood, and I believe that my grandparents brought it from Norway in the 1880s. It has been passed down to me. And it has the barometer circle in the middle, and it's made out of some sort of dark hardwood. And I can understand the storm. The rest of the words on there are Norwegian, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you should be able to find somebody around Wisconsin who can read that for you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Those barometers are collectible. People are interested in, mechanical things, for lack of a better word, but those kinds of things, and things that have a purpose and are working like that, even if it doesn't work how it did work back then. Don't know what size it is, but a lot of them I see might be about 10 to 14 inches round.
This is 7 inches across.
Okay. And that's a little bit on the smaller side, but nice because it would, you know, fit in anywhere. And I would say you're probably, I've sold them at estate sales for about the $125 range. And when I talk about an estate sale, I'm talking about a tag sale where we have maybe 2 or 3 days to sell. So that's kind of an orderly liquidation. If you put it in an antique shop, you could have a higher price on it because you can wait until the buyer who wants it comes along.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Shirley Bauman, Certified Personal Property Appraiser, our guest today. Glad to have you listening in. I'm Larry Mila. Rhonda Fanning, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Certified Personal Property Appraiser Shirley Bauman, our guest. She's also a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. Great to have her along. She comes by every so often to talk with us about what's hot in the world of appraisals. And, of course, you can join in. All of our lines are filled right now, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. You can post a photo there, and if you've got a picture of something you want us to take a look at, why, we can do that. In fact, someone did just that, Shirley, and we've got it up here.
Right. It's a picture of a marionette.
Yeah. So marionette, at least from the 1950s. Back of the neck says F&B V. Austin. There's a little crack on the back of the neck and some chipping on the hand, probably from her playing with it or him playing with it as a child.
Right, and that's what they were made for. So that's not unusual to find some of that. F&B is a company that's known for making dolls.
Okay.
And they were very, very well known, and they've been still making some of them recently, and I think they are still in business. But they were big in the 40s, 50s, in that area, American company. And that is where you look for a name of a company on a doll, on a marionette, anything like that. And the most valuable part of it, of course, is the head. If you look at it, the face on this one is kind of a clown face. Hands are hands, feet are feet, but the face is what makes it different from all the rest of it. So that crack in the back of the neck does affect it more than the chipping on the hands would. marionettes. It's kind of valued as a doll because it's basically a doll with the strings on it. Yeah. And we'd be looking at, with the chipping in that, probably around the, I'd say $75 range, give or take. Mm-hmm. You know, they made some like Howdy Doody that were very well known, and they would bring more money than one that we don't know. And I'm not familiar with this one in particular, but it looks like fun.
Yeah, it looks like fun, doesn't it? It's mm-hmm. really cool. That's on my Facebook page if you want to take a look at the Larry Mueller Show. Tom in Earl, Wisconsin, your turn now. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I got a antique deer. It's from the 1920s, supposed to be, and it's a marble base. It's bronze, pure bronze, and it's laying down on the base. I got him paid $50 for it. I was wondering how much it'd be worth.
Okay, I've got a couple of questions for you. Do you see any markings on it at all, anywhere? On the base?
I ain't looking at it right now or nothing right now. I'm in the car.
Okay. A lot of times you will see markings on it, and that can tell us who made it, who designed it, or who cast the bronze. And those sometimes can affect value. Size-wise, you didn't mention. How big is it?
It's probably about 10, 12 inches long.
Okay. Marble and bronze, if it's cast well, and there are different qualities of casting, but animals like that are collectible, as are certainly the human figures. On marble is a good thing. Some of them could be on wood blocks or alabaster or whatever, so marble brings it up a little bit. Not knowing, let's say we don't have any marking and never knowing who made it, if it's well cast and, you know, all parts there, no chips on the antlers
or whatever. Chips or nothing. It's all beautiful.
Beautiful, yeah. I think you did very well. They can bring, you know, well-known bring a lot, even unknowns. I would just guess you're somewhere in the maybe $125 to $175 range tops.
Okay.
So I think you did well.
Then I got a question on some silver I got.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's from 1911. It says you're right on 1911 U.S. Army, and it's a complete set of silver.
Flatware?
Like
knives and forks and that kind of?
Yeah, knives, forks, and spoons, all the stuff for even the fancy stuff for the, you go from side to side, knives, big knives, small knives.
It said 1911 U.S. on it?
1911 U.S. Army, it says on it.
U.S. Army, okay. Well, I shouldn't say that. I started to say chances are it's not sterling silver, but if it was for an officer, maybe the general sterling, mm-hmm. We don't know that. Sounds like it's, you know, just going in towards that World War One era. And so it would be some research on there. Silver, of course, you could weigh it. And the way I weigh silver is I take a mesh bag, put it in there, and use one of those suitcase scales you hold up. And then put the silver in that mesh bag, and it'll tell you the weight of it. And, of course, you can look up the spot price on the Internet and find out what it's worth by melt that way for scrap metal. But, of course, with U.S. Army, there are military collectors, there are silver collectors, there are flatware collectors. You probably have something. Obviously, you can tell what the scrap value is, but I think it's worth much more than that because being marked Army, I can't tell you an exact value. I don't know what it looks like, but it would probably be worth looking into and possibly having insured if it's a large set. And it's always the serving pieces on those flatware sets that bring the most money. So you were talking about the knives and serving pieces that would be worth taking a look at, I think.
There you go. Thanks, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. Mark in Port Washington. Hi.
Hello. Hi, Larry. Hi, guest. I forgot your name again.
What, Shirley Bauman?
Shirley Bauman, yes. Thank you. I got the notion that in the last couple of years, ukuleles and mandolins have kind of picked up in popularity. And I had a question about the condition of it that I have. It's because it's an older one than the ones that are more prized. I think they're size, you know, Lloyd Lars built them and signed some of them, and those are like the jackpot. But this one's a patent 1898, and it's a 1916 model. And it's the question I have is if it's passed down from family member, does that, you know, improve its sellability, like on eBay or something?
Well, when anything is passed down and you know where it came from and you have that history to it, that's called provenance, and that helps. You might say that the thing is...
But if you don't have proof, but it's obviously like you just opened up a doorway to 1898 almost, because my grandpa gave it to my dad, gave it to me.
Sure, sure.
And they both passed away.
Do you know who made this one?
I don't know who made it. Like, it's called the Gibson, but it wasn't made by Lloyd Lars.
Well, there are lots of makers. I mean, you see Gibsons and others as well, and I'm not familiar with that one in particular. But knowing where it came from and that your family's had it would just indicate that it's been, and you said, kept in really good condition. And you are right in that interest has picked up a little bit. Not so long ago, we sold a 1915 Gibson mandolin, and it was needed repair, and we took it to a luthier, and it took almost a year to steam it so we could bend the wood again, but we did, and it sold for $2,500.
Yeah, that's about the going rate. I was wondering if you could get a little bit more if it was kept safe for a long time.
Well, condition is important, so it's hard to say that. Really, the provenance adds value if it was someone famous or well-known, or maybe they played in a band once that was well-known or something like that.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. That gives me a great idea.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. I got an email from Janice in Madison. My adult son in Salt Lake City has a bag full of coins, maybe a couple hundred, collected by his grandparents in the 60s and 70s, mostly dimes and pennies. I think they are in order by year and denomination, but nothing else, really. What's the best way to sell them?
Well, coins, again, is a very specialized collectible. And what the dealers do, if you look on eBay or something, look at all of the specifics that they mention about coins. So you need to, someone needs to look anyway and find out if there are any of those very valuable ones. The 60s, 70s, not really all that old, but you might find some. Take a look through there and see. What I would do is take it to several coin dealers, not just one, but several, and get their opinions on what they might pay for it, and realize that they are buying to resell. But that way you will get, if they're all three different, keep going until you get some that are the same, the best prices on that. The thing is, some people will look at it and just give you a ballpark figure, assuming that most of them are not particularly collectible. But that's really what I would do, unless you want to invest in getting them appraised and then, like I say, on eBay, selling them small groupings or, specialty coins one at a time. But that takes a lot of time and effort.
Kathy in Detroit, Michigan.
Hello. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I wonder if your guest could answer a couple general questions for me. I'm going to have to liquidate my mother's house pretty soon. And a friend of mine thinks that there isn't much there that's worth very much, but I don't know that. And I'm wondering two things. How do you determine whether or not it's worth having an estate sale? And does the person, if you pay somebody to come and appraise what's there, does that have to be, or should that be a different person from the one doing the estate sale? And what kind of fees are we talking about?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Shirley, you do this all the time.
I do. I do this a lot, and I appreciate the question. And I do find people in your situation saying, I have no idea what we have. And what I do it several different ways for people. I can go in for an hourly fee and do what I call a consultation. And basically, it's a walkthrough to tell you if you have anything or not. And I can't really speak for other people. I do that at $125 an hour for the verbal walkthrough. And I would guess in your area you might have appraisers who would do something similar and that kind of thing. And then we say, now, this might be valuable, this isn't, and not get real specific saying every piece, this is this much and this is this much. But we might say, oh, you've got some pottery over there that's collectible, or this kind of thing. And yes, it would be. And is it always necessary to have a different person sell the collection than does the appraisal. You know, if I come in and somebody's saying we're going to have an estate sale, and I conduct estate sales, I will go in basically on a proposal basis to look at it to see if I want to do the sale, if it's I feel there's enough of value to make it worthwhile for both you and the heirs to the estate as well as my company. And at that point, you know, we're on the same side of the table. The more we make, the more we sell it for, the more both of us make. Mm-hmm. So we are on the same side of the table. So I don't think it is always necessary. But what you want to do is not sell things to the person who does your appraisal. And don't have the estate sale company try to buy things, saying, no, it's not worth a sale, but I'll buy these items from you. You don't want to do that. And most estate sale, reputable estate sale companies do not buy anything from the sale except perhaps after the end of the sale if there is something in particular that they might go back. And I never, ever buy anything myself from an estate sale. I did one time buy a coffee cup from one because it matched my grandmother's set, and it was a $3 cup. So that's the kind of thing we don't want to see them, you know, kind of hoarding the good things for themselves. That's not a good way to do things. So I'd bring in a professional and have them tell you. And I know there are some appraisers from the International Society of Appraisers who are accredited that organization in the Detroit area.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Gloria in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
What can we do for you?
When my father died in 1990, I inherited his violin. And there's a little tag in the bottom of the violin that says an exact replica of a Stradivarius violin. Other than that, I don't know anything about that. It's in very good condition. A friend of his had it restrung about 10, 15 years ago. But other than that, I don't know anything about it, other than he played it when he was a child, and he was 87 when he died, and he died in 1990.
Yeah. I see a lot of family violins when in my work. And I'm glad to hear you say it said a copy or a replica of a Stradivarius. I see so many of them with labels that say Stradivarius. And they are supposedly all known where they are, and they're not going to be up in just anybody's attic. So I'm glad it says a replica. And that means it's probably a well-made instrument. And they were proud enough of it to put that label on it. And so that's a good thing. You want to look at it. If it's still playable, that's really a good test of an instrument to see how it sounds, if someone can play it. You also want to look and see that it's not warped or cracked. That will affect value significantly. Finish. You know, if a violin has been played a lot, you're going to see some finish wear on the back of it and that kind of thing. But you want to know that it's really, you know, in pretty good original condition helps. Violins can range, and I really can't give you a number, but, you know, I see some of them that are brought in that I would say would value less than $100 and some that are into the thousands. So without seeing it, I would say yours is over that $100 mark if it's an exact replica of Stradivarius. You know, they made them in Italy, in a lot of places in Europe, and they were among the best makers. So it's really hard to say for sure, but I think, you know, it might be worth having somebody take a look at it in person. You also want to look if there's a bow with it. Some bows can be worth more than the violin, and some things you want to look at on the bow is near the base of it, if it's imprinted where it's made, like France. They made very good bows in France during that turn of the century period and things. Mm. So don't discount the bow.
Okay. My sister took the bow when he died, and I got the violin. I don't know what she ever did with it. But, okay, well, where's the best place to take an instrument to look to have it appraised?
You're in the Green Bay area?
Yes.
I would say look for an appraiser in your area. I know there are some Massard Auction Company in Green Bay has an appraiser on their staff who's a trained appraiser. And they may or may not do instruments, but they should know in the area who would do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Dave in Madison emailed to ask if you could discuss Christie artist pictures from the 20s, 30s. He said, my wife has a couple of pictures which she loves. Layout seems unique as we have the tall pictures which are narrow. And
Do we have a photograph of that? It's so hard to say, and I don't.
I'm not seeing the photograph.
I'm not real familiar with the Christie work and values. The things with art is values change even faster than the antique market, I think. And
I'm just not getting it out.
And I'm not sure with when you say pictures, are we talking a painting, a print? A watercolor, oil painting. We need a little bit more information to discuss that. And if you could post that, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Brian in Cottage Grove, Minnesota next. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Great show. Thanks for your time.
Sure.
I think it's an engraved print that my grandmother had from the early 30s or 40s. And it's a Currier and Ives print, and it's got a raised surface, so I think it's an engraved print, cream-colored paper with green ink. Just wondering if there's a market for Currier and Ives prints.
Well, there is a market for that, and that, of course, is a real well-known name. You know, we all see the little prints of Christmas scenes and that on the Christmas cards, and so a lot of people know Currier and Ives' name. And when you talk about being able to feel the engraving, it's probably a steel engraving, and we call that feeling the steel, when you can touch it and you can actually feel where that is. So I would say that's probably what you have, a steel engraving. And if it's in good condition, a lot of those, prints that we see have some foxing, which is the brown spots around it, or maybe some water staining or something like that. So you've got to look at condition. But if we're talking a print, a lot of times I see them in about the maybe 12 by 14 or 18 by 20, 24 inches, that kind of thing. And we could be talking in the $100, $150
range.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And again, condition makes a big difference in paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a 12 by 14. It's pretty pristine. It's been framed for a number of years, but it was kept in one of her press books for a long, long time. So it's in fairly good condition.
Good.
Thank you for your information.
Sure.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. I was flashing back as we were talking about all these things. We were at the Smithsonian Institute out in Washington, mm-hmm. and looking at through several of the various buildings and looking at the things in those on display are just like, oh my goodness.
I know. I can't get enough of museums. And the things that they have that you can only see at those places are just phenomenal. And, you know, as a kid, we used to go to a museum on a school trip, and all the kids would be cutting up, and I'd just be in awe.
Oh, man. Pam in Green Bay, thanks for calling. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Yes. My mother has, slides, for a slide viewer. Mm-hmm. They're the curve type. And actually, it's called Stereographic Library Tour of the World, Keystone View Company. And she has volumes 1 through 24. There's 1,200 pictures, and it's in mint condition. She also has the projector, although the handle is broke, but it does still view them.
Okay, what you're talking about is the slides, and the viewer is called a stereopticon, or sometimes people call it a stereoscope. And
okay.
You would put the card in little wires that are on the side of it, and then you could push that forward and back to get it into your focus for you. And there'd be two pictures on it, so it became like a stereo view, like it dimensional.
Right.
And those cards are collectible. And the fact that you have sets makes it really nice, because a lot of times they're single cards. And a lot of people, you know, if you go into the antique shop, you see a lot of single cards selling for maybe $2 to $5 a piece if it's not a real special subject. Yours being, I think you said something like a trip around the world kind of thing, or views of the world.
Tour of the world.
Yeah. The things that are very collectible would be military. If they're in military pictures, railroad, aviation, the early days of that, it would be most collectible. But yours being a set is very good. And you said how many boxes?
It's 24 volumes.
24 volumes.
Wow. 1,200,
1,200 pictures in all.
1,200 pictures. Well, just think if each of those was like $3 a piece, $3 to $5. Yeah. So you do have, and yeah, you have a very nice set full of those, you know, couple thousand dollars.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially if they're in good condition. Again, you've got to
Yeah, they're in, yeah, they're in mint condition.
Great.
Excellent condition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hang on to them, Pam.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Or maybe not hang on to them. Maybe this
maybe
is the time.
Maybe it's time to sell. I don't know.
Maybe it's time to sell.
Depends on if you need the money.
Yeah. Judy and Racine, hi to you.
Hi. Thanks. I have a wooden barber chair. It's a two-piece. It has the foot rest, and it has an iron part that you step on, and then they tip you back, and you put your feet up on the upper part.
Mm-hmm.
And it has on the iron part that tips the chair, the part that tips it back. It says patented 1870-1874, and the name on it is K-O-C-H. Mm-hmm. And on the plate, on the footrest, it's C-O-K-O-C-H-S, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, that patent date pretty much means the mechanism was patented at that time.
Right.
So that means it wouldn't be earlier than that, but it can certainly be later.
Right.
And they might have used that for quite some time before someone came up with a different patent that made it easier or better. So, you know, you're dating that probably into the, you know, to the possibly about the last quarter of the century there. Barber chairs can be interesting to sell because a lot of people don't have room or want them in their homes,
mm-hmm,
necessarily. So they have to have a place for it. Depends on how large it is and all of that. And there are some eclectic collectors who love those. I actually saw someone who had an old wooden electric chair in his office.
Oh, my gosh.
This one has gargoyles on the arms.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. I have seen them going in good condition. And again, this is waiting and finding the right buyer for around that 400, 450 range. So it's hard to say. And also, if the metal is brass or iron.
It's an iron.
Iron, yeah. That'll make it a little different. I think brass is a little more sought after. But I think you've got something worthwhile. It's just finding the buyer that wants it.
Yep. We have a Time Life book that has a picture of one. And the base of it is very much like ours, but the arms are fancier than the one in the book. And theirs has a leather footrest, and ours is the iron. But
very nice.
It was interesting to see it. I also have my mom called it a celery dish.
Yeah.
And it says Prussia on the back, and there's a crown, and it says Royal Rudolstadt.
Royal Rudolstadt is one of the makers in Prussia, Germany now. And it's a well-known company. Collectors like it. Now, that whole Victorian kind of thing is gone a little bit out of favor right now, those pretty painted dishes. And, of course, it makes a difference if it was decal decorated or hand-painted. If you magnify it, if you see a little dot pattern, it's probably a decal. If you see brush strokes in there, then it was hand-painted.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this one's hand-painted, and then it has a
gold rim trim on it, yeah. Depending, you know, what you have, I don't know how elaborate it is or whatever, but they could be anywhere from, say, right now, maybe $35 to $65, $75, something
okay,
in there.
In that range.
Mm-hmm.
Judy, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. Shirley Bauman, Certified Personal Property Appraiser. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Certified personal property appraiser Shirley Bauman, our guest. She's also a registered Wisconsin auctioneer and comes by every so often to talk with us about what's going on in the world of appraisals. Thanks to her for coming. Thanks to you for listening in and appreciate it. Give us a call if you have a question. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a photo of something you want us to take a look at, go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo of it right there. We'll take a look at it. And Warren in Madison is up next. So let's go to Warren. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I went to a estate sale a couple of years ago, and my wife found a whole bunch of picture frames for $2 each. And they're real nice frames, and we noticed that they had photographs in them. They're signed photographs from celebrities. So we bought a whole bunch of them. And one example is a 8x10 Senator Edward M. Kennedy picture, and it's signed. And there's also a letter with the United States Senate stationery thanking the lady for requesting the letter, and signed again. So we got a whole bunch of these kinds of things. I was wondering, how do I get the signature verified authentic? And then what would be the best way to consider selling something like this?
Right. I'm glad you mentioned the authentication, because that's so important. For example, on the Senator Kennedy and any political person, and they could have been using an auto pen.
Yeah,
it started around Robert Kennedy's presidential term, and when the auto pen came into common use, and it also could have been a secretary signing for them. So there are a couple of things you want to look for. One, you're looking for at a signature. If you magnify it a lot, what you should see is differences in pressure as they're writing. Maybe as they go in a loop, it'd be a little bit less pressure, say the top of an R, or at the end as they lift up the pen, it kind of trails off and gets thinner. And there's always going to be tiny little voids in an ink signature. So if you can magnify that, you might be able to see that yourself. If it's all even, or if it's got a dot pattern, chances are it's a printed signature and not authentic. You also can compare it to known signatures. If you go on the internet and search for their signature, and if it looks different from the way they generally signed it, then you'll know right away that it was probably someone signing for that person. Now, signatures vary a lot, even if they are real, as to how sought after they are and therefore how valuable they can be. Some of them you might get, I don't know, $35 for, and some you can get hundreds for and more. But, you know, think about if they were at a rummage sale, were they just promotional photos that were stamped and or signed once and then reproduced a lot?
No, these are the real deal.
They are. Mm. Okay. Well, I'd say probably the internet would be a good place for you to sell them, because you'd be exposed to a large number of collectors. And, you know, you might look for an appraiser or there are specialists in historic documents and autographs that could help you authenticate it if you have any concerns about that.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling, Warren. And Dwayne in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes. We picked up one of the old steamer trunks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At a sale. And while it took us probably a month of internet searching to get a key for it, and they said that was the only key available anywhere. But just kind of wondering, where would a person in the Eau Claire area here find out, get a value on it and possibly sell it?
Well, if you don't have appraisers in your area, which you can look on the internet at the appraisal associations, or some auctioneers have taken what they call the in the auctioneer, it's personal property appraiser, GPPA or MPPA, that stands for graduate or master personal property appraiser. So some of the auctioneers have that kind of training, and that might be a good bet in your area. And also, you know, sometimes we discount antiques dealers, and some of them are very, very knowledgeable about what they have. But you want to be careful that they're not just trying to buy things from you at a low price. But if they can give you, you know, your antique shops and that kind of thing, if they're reputable dealers, they may know a lot and not necessarily be trained as appraisers, but because of their experience and that kind of thing, they know a lot about it. And you might sell it through a local auction. Yep. Find an auction that's selling antiques in the area.
So lots of possibilities there. Duane, good luck. Thank you for calling. And Dick in Bark River, Michigan, hi to you.
Hello again, and thank you. I've been collecting Upper Peninsula and Wisconsin paper and books, but I'm going to throw in something special. Right in front of me, I have a binder with a lot of letterhead stationery, letterhead envelopes from the Byrd Little America Antarctic Expedition 28-30, including mailed envelopes from Antarctica, and even they had a weekly mimeograph one-page newspaper, and Dr. Haldor Barnes took a lot of photographs personally of, like, the ship, the auxiliary bark, and this is good stuff, but the right person again.
That's exactly right. But it sounds like you have a wonderful collection, and because you have a collection, not just a piece or a couple pieces, should add to its value, I would think.
Oh, I see one here with, he took with a dirigible, it's right, I never saw this before closely, a dirigible attached to a tower.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's a picture of the airplane on the boat going to Antarctica he took personally. Boy, this is good. I haven't looked at it. Icebergs.
Sounds like you're having a good time kind of discovering what you have there. Yes, I'm sure you have a wonderful collection. And what putting a value on it is something I can't do off the top of my head because I don't know all that you have. But if you are interested in selling it, I would think that needs to go to a major auction of historic documents. And we see those a lot in the major cities at the bigger auction houses. And people do go for those. For example, if I come across things like that, there are members of my professional association that just specialize in those kind of historic documents, and I discuss with them what would be the best place and the time. You know, they have such and such an auction house every year in whatever month, let's say March, has a historic document auction that's well known throughout the collector group there, and so that's where we might try to place it. And when we do that, we give them usually send them photographs first and give them an inventory, and then they decide if they want to go ahead and see it. And all it, and we always get a pre-auction estimate so that the individual can decide if that meets with their approval, that this is what they would take, a minimum amount that they would take. And they usually give you an estimate that includes a maximum. Sometimes it goes over maximum, but it's their best assessment of what they think your particular item might go for.
So I could maybe get call New York, Sotheby's, Christie's, Doyle,
sure.
Swan.
Yes.
See who's most excited. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, oh, let's see, we've got so many things. I'm looking here and I'm seeing a Washburn banjo we can talk about. I have some ice cream parlor chairs. We can talk about those. We have a German doll with a question about the number on it. Those are all things that we're going to talk about with Shirley Bauman. Shirley is certified personal property appraiser, and she's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll be taking a look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with Shirley. So please stay with us. Every once in a while, there's a story in the newspaper about someone finding something in their attic. They have it appraised. Lo and behold, it's worth $1 million. But how often does that really happen? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along on the Ideas Network. And whether it's in your attic, your jewelry box, or your china cabinet, chances are there's something that you own that may be worth some money. And Shirley Bauman, our guest today, is a certified personal property appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. And she can help out. What do you have that you'd like to know more about? Maybe you're wondering what its value might be. Well, I think Shirley can help. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also go to my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question there. Also post a photo there as well. Click like while you're there, and we'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back with Shirley right after the news. If somebody told you you could appear on Antiques Roadshow, would you take it? Have you always wondered whether you have something that's worth a lot of money, or maybe it's just a value of sentiment? Larry Mueller here with my guest, Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services. She has a Facebook page and a website, and you can find them all on my – go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Just click on them, and they're right there. Great to have her along. Thank you for joining in. Lots of people with questions, Shirley. And by the way, thanks again for coming by. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's always a great time to be here.
Jay in Milwaukee has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Jay. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hey, I got a item that I'm not sure if it's plentiful or unique, but the history behind it is unique, I'm sure. My dad got this with three of his buddies off of Hitler's desk after World War II, snatched it out from under the nose of a Soviet guard. It's a, I'm guessing, 1/20th scale model of a German 88mm cannon. The base is pot metal and the barrel is steel. And from what my dad said, it could actually shoot live ammunition. And I've looked at photos of the Reichskanzler's office, and I have never seen a photo of this before, so I don't know if it's something the Soviets just found and plopped on the desk, or if it was something that was actually there throughout the war.
Hmm. Well, that's something I don't know either off the top of my head. It sounds interesting, though, because, number one, you have some history, and I would write that down and keep it with the item. You know, if it ever gets separated from you, your family, or whatever, you're gone.
Or you get hit by a bus today.
Yeah. Somebody
exactly.
else would appreciate that story. And, of course, you've got the, you know, it can be proven that your relative was in the war and where they were. So that helps your story. Any of the military items, if... I mean, I don't know how you can prove that it was actually on Hitler's desk, unless you have...
Yeah, that's obviously the big hole in the
story. Yeah, that is.
But, you know, the only other thing I can say is, why would my dad lie to me?
Well, yes, and I would say that too, but somehow, you know, stories get embellished or whatever
exactly.
happens, and maybe it gets misunderstood or who knows what, but... anybody who would buy it from you, for example, would want proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I'm questioning your father in any way.
No, of course. Well, like I said, I've gone looking for a company that would have made these. You know, was it just an embellished toy, or was it something that was made unique or in limited numbers? I don't even know that.
Yeah, that would take some good research on that, and... that's certainly not something we can do here in the short time on the radio.
No.
But,
no.
You know, it might be worth having somebody take a look at it.
Yeah.
And military items are always collectible.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Julie, we have quite a few Facebook photos, which are really cool, actually. Julie sent us one. A Washburn banjo that belonged to her grandfather was left to her son when her mother passed. It's old and needs some restoration. Pegs for the strings don't hold the strings in tune. Any recommendation for someone to fix this problem and also a possible value?
What you want to do is look for a luthier. That is someone who builds and repairs stringed instruments. You might not have one in Eau Claire. You may. I don't know. You may have to go possibly up to the Twin Cities to find someone. Here in Madison, I go to Lane's Luthery, and Lane is great with the instruments, and he does repair them. And it's hard to give you a value. I'm not seeing a lot of this. Instruments of this style, this period, we might often see going in the $1,000-$1,500 range, and of course it'll probably vary after it gets some restoration work. So your luthier can probably help you with that, because a lot of times those people also buy and sell instruments. So don't sell it to them necessarily, but they should be able to help you with some of that value. If they were to sell it, what would they put on it?
There's Eric has a Liberty Bell or Liberty Bond box. A photo of it. It's kind of interesting.
That's a nice metal box, black metal, and you can see it's probably stenciled or stamped on the top. Those don't have a real high value anymore. I would say you're probably under the $50 range on that.
And John has a vase.
Well, actually, there's two Asian items that are pictured on the internet.
This one's about 13 inches high, and then there's another one
down a little further that's a metal, I believe, maybe.
Yeah, Jack has a small bronze vase with archaic Chinese.
I can't read the language, I'll tell you that right now. So, and I can't really tell from those. They do look like very nice pieces. But I do want to mention something about the Asian art market right now. That is a market that's hot. And what's happening is, especially the Chinese, are buying back the treasures for their country that have come to this country. And, I mean, even in this area, I was talking to an antiques dealer when I was up in Tomah, and she said during the summer she's got people that make the circuit from Minneapolis to Chicago buying for the Chinese market, and they ship the things back. I was doing an appraisal the other day, and we came across some prints, or actually watercolors, that are were by famous famous Chinese painters, and found out that Sotheby's had sold one by that artist, similar size, at $172,000 recently.
Oh.
So he had just a package of 13 sitting in the basement. So they weren't all by the same artist, but they are going high right now. And we're in touch with Sotheby's on those. When I have Asian, I'm not an Asian market specialist. And when I have the Asian items, I check in with one of the specialists in my professional organization who can read the language. And that helps a lot, because that tells us who made it. I couldn't read the signatures on these prints either, but my colleague up in Toronto, who is a real scholar and reads and speaks the language, was able to tell us right away how valuable and they were. And so that's something I can't really do off the top of my head, but that's the benefit. One of the benefits of belonging to one of these professional organizations for appraisers.
Marlon sent us a photo of a 57 Corvette pedal car that he won at the Dunn County Fair in 1957, a limited issue given to Chevrolet dealers as a promotion, wondering about the value. If that's a recent picture,
it
looks
sweet.
To be in great shape.
Sweet car. Very nice condition. And if he's had it since 1957 and kept it all that nice, that's a great job. because it's a Corvette, which is, you know, a special car, people like the vets, and the fact that it was from the Chevy dealers. Mm-hmm. It means it was a promotional item, and as I said before, advertising's hot, so that kind of falls into that category as well. And pedal cars are great. If that's original condition and not restored, you've got a beauty. Value is kind of hard to put on that, but I would think you're in the between 500 and 1,000.
Oh, yeah, I would think,
at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And here's a, Bridget sent us a turkey.
Yeah.
Comanche pottery from Texas, she thinks.
I don't know that particular pottery, but the turkey dishes and all that are always interesting. People like the animals and shaped dishes. I would look up Comanche pottery on the internet and Google that and see what you can find. I think, again, we don't really know how large it is. It's always hard to guess that from a picture. We see it on the corner of a table, so I'm guessing it's maybe about 10 inches or so. It almost looks like glass from here, slag glass, though. So it's really hard to say it, but it could be a glaze that's made to replicate slag glass. So I guess I'm not going to say too much of value, but I think it you know, it's probably somewhere in that, $6,500 range, or maybe mm-hmm. even a little more, not knowing that pottery, it's hard to say.
Okay. And let's see, we had one other thing that I wanted to bring up. There was somebody wondering whether, and you've kind of discussed this about having someone judge the value. This
yes.
happens to be with jewelry, and then maybe buying it as well. That's not a good idea.
Yeah, they're actually saying that they had some things appraised at a local jewelry store, and they also buy jewelry, and is this a conflict of interest? And yes, it is. The ethics of my professional organization say that we should not do that. The reason being, not that people aren't always honest, but the potential for conflict of interest is there. You say it's worth $50 or $75 or whatever it is, where really it might be worth $500. So, of course, if the person is going to buy it, why necessarily might they give you the highest value if they want to get a good price on it? So it's best to avoid that whole situation. Get someone to appraise it, and if you want to sell it, you know, sell it to someone else. But at least at that point, you'll know its value, or what they say its value is. And mm-hmm. and he also talks about in Chicago, could they get better prices? And generally speaking, that Chicago market is higher. And he says he's from Appleton, and I would say yes. In the Chicago market, you should be able to get a higher value. Yes.
Helen in Madison, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I have a German doll, and it's got the number 6 on the back of it under the label. Does that tell me how old it is?
Well, the 6 probably is it a small doll or large?
Well, actually, it's been played with so much, there's not much left of it
okay.
other than the head.
Well, sometimes there are times when the number could say the size if it's 6 inches high. But if it was larger than that, a lot of times those numbers are like model numbers or mold numbers rather than age. If it's
okay.
a porcelain or china head from Germany, they're often the later 1800s. I do see quite a few of them in that range, but that number wouldn't indicate anything about the date.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Sure.
Thank you for calling. Marlon in Dodgeville. Hi.
Hello?
Yes. Hi, Marlon. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question that I think Shirley could answer, and it has to do with the aftermarket of signed and numbered lithographic prints. They're all over the place, and some, of course, are more valuable than others because of the artist and so forth. But the aftermarket pricing on that seems to be all over the place. Can you give me any information about one of the best places to, for instance, sell it legitimately?
Well, there is a lot to learn about that market, and some of the things have to do with, well, condition, of course, and as you said, the artist, how many there were, and some of it is just aesthetics. People might like to look at, a scene with children in it more than one that you might see with hunting, for example, mm-hmm. or whatever it might be. As a matter of fact, you see sometime with dead game in it. Now, wouldn't you like to look at children playing rather than that? A lot of people would, not everyone, certainly. So that also makes a difference. Size of it makes a difference. What you need to do to be able to sell them is actually have an idea of what that artist in that genre goes for, if it is a still life or has individuals, human figures in it, whatever. And the trick is to do that research. Get out on the internet and find something by that artist and see what those prices are going for. Now, I know it can be a little bit harder as an individual. I, for example, subscribe to some databases that show auction results. And so a lot of times we can find things a little bit easier than the average person, but do some of that searching, and there's a lot out there that you can find. And that's how you can sell it then on the internet or however you want, because you then know somewhat of what the value might be, and you can put a reasonable price on it even if you do it the internet way.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. We got a photo here from Kurt. Very nice woven basket with attached rope snake and top.
Hmm.
Value on something like that. That's pretty, isn't it?
It is very nice.
And we get it. We have we know the size from the hand.
From the hand, yeah, that helps. It's not a huge basket, but certainly not a miniature. I'm not sure who wove the basket from just looking at the picture. And someone who is maybe a Native American or fiber art specialist might be able to tell you that. But I'm not sure. It almost looks like it could be sweetgrass, but I can't say that from the photograph. And I can't actually give you a value because of that. If it's, that's the thing we have to do is look and find out if we know who made it, maybe what tribe, what period, and then we can get a better understanding of that. And I'll tell you a secret. I've worked at the Antiques Roadshow, and they don't know it all off the top of their heads either. They travel with their computers and resources, and they do take some time. You know, when people are going to be on TV, they take those people and give them something to eat and do a little makeup on it while the appraiser does some research. So while they can spot something, a lot of times they're also doing some of those that research too, even though it looks so spontaneous. So I'm sorry, I really can't give you any more on that one.
Patricia in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. This goes a step beyond the appraising and selling. And what are one's tax ramifications? The seller of coins or an antique item, how is that handled? Do we have to claim that as income on income tax?
Boy, I think you'd have to talk to your tax specialist on that. But if you purchased it and you resold that, it's a different story. Now, if I, as an auctioneer, if I am selling someone's estate at auction, I do not have to charge tax for that estate. Now, for some reason, if I do an estate tag sale, I do have to. And I think it's because the estate tag sale people don't have state and national associations representing them. Because the idea is on the estate as an auction, they've already purchased those items and paid the sales tax on it. So otherwise it would be taxed twice.
I guess now, I was thinking in terms of one's income.
Yeah.
Yeah, if one sells, objects they already have, not that they've gone out and purchased them, and, if I sell an antique and receive $200-$300 or whatever amount, do I have to claim that as income on my income tax?
You know what? I don't know that off the top of my head, and I don't want to give you my guess right now.
Okay.
I will look that up, though, and put that on my Facebook page.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
And your Facebook page, again, of course, you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and get it, but what's your...
Facebook page is for Heirloom Appraisal.
Okay.
And I do have two websites, heirloomappraisal.com and baumanauctions.com. So you can look at both of those. And I do have some sales, auctions, and estate sales coming up, and people can find those on my website.
Yeah,
too.
You're going to be around the southern Wisconsin area?
I've got some in the Madison area, estate sale on the 9th, 10th, 11th of November, and an auction tentatively scheduled for the 14th of November here in Madison. I'm working, actually, contracting with some people for next spring already up in Mazamani and Madison and this kind of south central area.
That's always on your website.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Rodney in La Crosse. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi there. Hey, I have a dinosaur bone. It's probably a piece of history.
Okay.
It's a vertebrae. It's 6 inches in diameter and it's 6 inches long. It's jet black in color, and then I have another one that's actually the same thing, but it's only about 2.5 inches in diameter and 2.5 inches long.
Actually, it wasn't so long ago that I saw a dinosaur bone on one of the TV shows that deals with collectibles, and I can't remember if it was...
The Roadshow?
It wasn't The Roadshow. It was one of the other ones on History Channel or TLC or something like that. And they did... actually, it was the Pickers. They found a dinosaur bone, and they were able to find it, authenticate it, and sell it. And
I saw that show.
Did you?
Yes.
So then you have a little something to compare it by. Was yours anything like what they had?
Well, no. This here's a vertebrae.
Okay. They had...
They had a bone or something.
They had actually like a femur.
Yeah, that's right. What did you want to know about it? Value or? Yeah,
some kind of a value of it.
I found
at the stone quarry in the quarry in Pensacola, Florida, and I just happened to run across it at a yard sale.
Mm. Well, I guess.
I have a whole, like a 1-pint jar full of shark teeth that came out of that.
Well, I honestly can't tell you a value off the top of my head. It's such a special item. You don't see all that many of them, and I've never had to research one or sell one, so I'm sorry about that, but.
Can't help you out there.
Can't help you.
All right. Well, Shirley, here we are out of time. My goodness.
Already.
It flew by. Again, your site is heirloomappraisal.com is one of them.
Yes, and baumanauctions.com.
Baumanauctions.com, and your Facebook page is?
Heirloom Appraisal.
Heirloom Appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
Shirley, thank you so much. Look forward to another visit.
Oh, I can't wait.
Shirley Bauman, certified personal appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. Great to have her along. Thanks for listening. Garden Talk coming up. Tomorrow at 11, we'll hear about herbs. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.